Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host. Tonight, our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 or 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, we'll cue you into the show. And thank you, 97,000 listeners, for tuning in to Help for HD Radio. We now have approximately 200 archived episodes for you to refer back to and send out to your family and fellow caregivers. Although Help for HD Radio broadcasts are usually typically focused on discussions relating to research and care of Huntington's disease and juvenile Huntington's disease, occasionally we do cross over to other topics, especially when it directly affects our HD world. Help for HD Radio supports stem cell research, always has, always will. And tonight our incredible special guest is Kevin McCormick. He is the communications director at CIRM, that's California Stem Cell Institute. And Kevin is also a dear friend of Help for HD and was featured keynote speaker at our first symposium. He considers himself to be the official translator for the agency, working to turn complex language about equally complex science into everyday English that anyone, including Kevin, can understand. And before joining the agency, he spent more than 20 years working as a journalist, most of that in TV news in San Francisco, California. And there is a new leader at CIRM, so we'll be talking about that, President and CEO Randy Mills, and they have a new strategic plan. The topic of tonight's show is CIRM's new strategic plan, which actually aims to engage patient advocate community to increase the number of clinical trials CIRM funds and to help recruit patients for those clinical trials and to help make changes in the way the FDA works in order to speed up the ability to move promising research into clinical trials in people. So welcome to the show, Kevin. How are you tonight?
I'm great, Melissa. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great having you. Well, first tell us a little bit, how did you come to work for CIRM?
Back in 2004, when Proposition 71, the voter initiative that created CIRM, was on the ballot, I was still in TV news, still a journalist focusing on mostly healthcare news. And so I did a number of stories about the ballot initiative, and I thought, what a cool idea, you know, funding stem cell research. I mean, it was such an exciting area, even back then, that I thought it was a really exciting prospect. And after I left TV news, I worked in a number of different places, but mostly in kind of in healthcare, in hospitals, and in communications and media relations. And then this job opened up at CIRM, and they were looking for someone, and it just felt that my background in journalism and in healthcare and in media relations in a hospital, it all just kind of came together. And so it was just an extraordinary moment when they said, we'd like to offer you the job. And I thought, oh, my God, I've got the job. And that was kind of – it was both thrilling and a bit scary as well to realize that, you know,
yeah,
I'm now working for this agency, this organization, this group of people that so many other people are looking to help them. And it just felt like kind of the most kind of wonderful privilege. And it's I've been here now almost 4 years, and it still feels like that, a tremendous privilege to come into work every day and work with these people.
Fantastic. Well, you've seen a lot of change.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And this is really an interesting time to be in this area, in stem cell research, because up until a few years ago, we'd always be talking about kind of the promise of stem cell research, because it was still very much kind of a laboratory-based thing. Most of the therapies were still being tested in the lab, but increasingly it's about the reality. I mean, that fact that so many therapies are now moving out of the lab and into clinical trials in people. At CIRM, for example, we're funding 14 different clinical trials in various different diseases. And so this is no longer just some kind of abstract intellectual academic exercise. This is the kind of real science that's going on in real people right now. And obviously, as your listeners will know, I mean, this is life and death stuff. So the things that we're working on are things that people are looking to change their lives, to save their lives.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the stem cell therapies are so promising?
Well, because I think with normal treatments, normal medications, what you're trying to do is kind of arrest the symptoms, stop the progress of the disease. But with stem cells, you're thinking about things in an entirely different way. You're not looking just to stop the progress. You're looking to turn back the clock, to kind of to restore function to tissues and cells and organs that have been damaged by disease, to help restore, regenerate these tissues. And so we're not just looking at kind of holding still, creating a holding pattern and treating the symptoms. We're looking at treating the cause and kind of correcting the cause, if you like. For example, with, say, neurological diseases, with Huntington's, replacing the cells in the brain that are being destroyed by the disease, and restoring function to those areas of the body that have been attacked by the disease. So the idea is not just to kind of keep things in place and kind of try and slow things down, although to begin with, even that would be a wonderful thing. It's to turn back the clock and really give people, restore that sense of vitality and energy that they had before. So I think that's the most important part. Stem cells are about regenerating. It's about creating a whole new way of thinking about disease and certainly a whole new way of treating disease.
Are we talking about curing diseases with stem cells?
Ultimately, yes. I think that's the goal for all of us. I mean, we want to bring as many cures as we can. Obviously, at this point, we'd be happy, and I think many patients and people who have particular diseases like Huntington's would be happy if we could just get an effective treatment that either stops the progression or slows down the progression or just kind of eases some of the symptoms. Because with a disease as complex as HD, there's so many things going on. A lot of it we don't necessarily understand. But if we could find a way to slow down that progression just to begin with, that would be a start. And then from that knowledge, you can then build on and build on. And ultimately, we'd obviously love to be able to say, yes, we can cure this. I mean, realistically, you think about it, it's a single cell, it's a single genetic change. And so you should be able to look at that and think, how do we fix that? How do we change that? And it may be if you can kind of get there early enough, you might be able to head it off. But right now, obviously, the one thing we really want to do is be able to develop treatments and therapies for people who have HD, who are in the early stages, mm-hmm. the later stages, so we can do something to make their life easier and better and the lives of their families easier and better.
Right, and CIRM, you know, funded Jan Nolte's stem cell research, which, I mean,
yeah.
We're just thrilled, and it's so promising. We do have one obstruction, though, obviously, and it's how do we get the FDA to approve, right?
Yeah, well, we're funding 10 different projects in HD and worth mm-hmm. almost like $26 million. So it's we have a big commitment here. We see there's great potential there. And obviously, Jan Nolte and her team, Vicky Wheelock and the team at UC Davis are doing quite remarkable work here. But it's with HD, as with many other things, one of the problems we face is getting those approved, those even the most promising therapies, into a clinical trial in people. And sometimes the hurdles that they face, the obstacles that they face, one of the biggest is getting approval from the FDA. They're mm-hmm. the ones who are kind of the gatekeepers. And in many ways, the FDA are kind of stuck, they're caught between a rock and a hard place. If they approve something very quickly and there are problems later on, they get called up before Congress and people yell at them and everything. And if they don't
right.
approve something and people die as a result of it, they get called up before Congress and people yell at them. So really, they're in a difficult position, and we want to work with the FDA and every other stakeholder in this, and that means patient advocates, people with different diseases from HD to Alzheimer's to osteoporosis, because there's a shared concern here that potential therapies are being delayed and in some cases kind of put off altogether, because a lot of drug companies, a lot of pharmaceutical companies and researchers are looking at the kind of the landscape and the problems and the obstacles that they have to face to get anything into patients and just saying it's not worth it. Because right now, in the last 15 years, not one stem cell therapy has been approved by the FDA, not one. And so you look at those obstacles, and you could see why many researchers and companies that invest in these research projects are going to say, you know, it's just not worth our time or money. The things we would have to do to get this therapy into patients and prove to the FDA that it's both safe and effective are overwhelming. And in the end, they're going to base their decision, in many cases, on financial return. And if they can't see a potential to get that therapy into patients in the near future and to make some money on it, they're not going to go into that space. I mean, and that's obviously where organizations, institutions like CIRM come in, because we don't have to worry about that. We're not looking to make a gazillion dollars in money. We're looking to find therapies for people. Our mission is to accelerate the development of stem cell therapies for people with unmet medical needs. And so that's our goal. That's our mission. So we can fund these things. We can help support them. But we still run into that problem with the FDA. And so that's one of the big things that we're working on right now, is a campaign where we're trying to bring together all the different stakeholders, the patients, the patient advocates, different organizations, and try to make some changes that will help the FDA speed up its approval process, make it easier and faster, but no less safe for patients.
And how do we get the FDA to kind of let their reservations down about approving stem cell? Is there a lack of maybe knowledge about stem cell, or is it?
I don't know if it's a lack of knowledge. I mean, there's certainly some of the people who work at the FDA are incredibly bright and smart and knowledgeable. It may be that stem cells and regenerative medicine in particular are, it's a new way of treating disease. It's a new way. It's a new approach. And there's a degree of caution to racing ahead with that. I think in the past, the FDA has run into some problems with different treatments and has been burnt. And I think they're kind of gun-shy, if you like. And so it may be that we just need to kind of step up some pressure to get our congressional representatives, the government, to kind of say to the FDA, it's time to move on. It's time to develop a new framework for this, for stem cells and regenerative medicine, because it's a new way of thinking about disease.
Right.
It's a new way of treating disease.
It's not a drug.
So,
right.
Exactly. So using the same system, the same approval process that was developed to treat lots of different diseases to approve medications isn't really appropriate. Some of the steps they make
right.
you go through aren't appropriate for stem cells. And so it's time to come up with a new way of looking at this and a new way of approving it.
Are other states having this same problem, or are other states working with stem cell? Are there any other state agencies?
Well, California is leading the way, really, in terms of stem cell research, mostly because of CIRM and the funding that we've been able to use to kind of push the industry in this area. But, I mean, if you look at Massachusetts and Boston, they're really moving along. New York, the same. But, again, they all face the same obstacles, which are moving the most promising research out of the clinic and out of the laboratory and into people. It's interesting when you look at some of the other countries around the world, and they're looking at these same problems and trying to think, how do we do this in a much better, much faster way that makes sense? Japan, for example, is changing the way it regulates these therapies, so it makes it easier to get these therapies into larger numbers of people. It still requires what we would call here a phase one trial, where basically you're looking at measuring the safety of a particular procedure, making sure that it's not going to harm patients, that it looks as though it's going to be doing what it does. And then once it's shown to be safe, you can then expand that the number of patients that you treat with that. You can give to 100 new patients, and then another 100 after that with bigger doses. And then so you can kind of basically you keep monitoring the patients as you treat them, but you're able to get this to a much larger group of people in a much faster way. And I think that makes sense. I mean, that kind of approach where you're still safety is still uppermost in your mind, but also ease of access and kind of access to larger groups of people is important too.
And
so I think that's one of the things. Yeah, that's one of the things that we're looking at. It's that notion of other countries are doing this. Japan, as I mentioned, and if we don't pick up the pace of what we're doing in this country, we risk losing a lot of this promising research and clinical trials to other countries, because researchers will move over there. They'll hold their clinical trials in other countries long before they hold them here.
Will there be like a state agency coalition to work with the FDA?
We're still working on particularly how the mechanics of how we do this. Right now, we're just basically trying to kind of generate awareness of this, and also to get people to kind of sign up, and so they can sign up by kind of emailing me if they like. And my email is kmccormack@cirm.ca.gov, and I can spell that out later. But if people want to kind of get more information about that, they can email me, and we're putting together a list so that when we're ready to kind of kickstart a much wider campaign, then we'll just email people. And it's not going to be a very demanding campaign for the people involved. And mostly it's going to be emails to congressional representatives, to government representatives. The idea is to create this groundswell, this what our president, Randy Mills, calls an army of stakeholders, so that people in Washington, people at the FDA, understand that there's a real need out there and there's a real demand from the people for this.
So let's talk about your strategic plan, CIRM's strategic plan. And your new CEO, President and CEO, Randy Mills, came on in 2015?
Yeah, he's been here about 18 months now. And he's really given us a new kind of sense of urgency. In the past, we were always kind of focused on developing new treatments and everything. But Randy comes from a background in industry where they actually test. They had a therapy. His was one of the first, the only therapies that was approved, but only for compassionate use in children. Mm-hmm. And this was to treat a disease called graft versus host disease. And that happens mm-hmm. when, say, a child you get a bone marrow transplant, which is designed to be life-saving. But in some cases, it causes a kind of allergic reaction, if you want to, which can be mm-hmm. deadly. In many kids, about 80% of children would die from this, and there was nothing to treat it. Mm. So Randy's old company, Osiris, they developed a treatment called Prochymal, which was effective in 64% of cases. Amazing, amazing treatment. Very effective, saved so many lives. But at the same time, many of the children who got it didn't make it. They died. And Randy saw that on a regular basis, and it was just this sense of loss, this sense that, you know, we need to mm-hmm. do more, we need to do better, that really drives him. So he brought that energy, that drive, and fierce commitment to pushing ahead as fast as we can to the agency. This idea, he always talks about, like, come to work every day as if people's lives depend on us, because people's lives depend on us. And that's an amazing mm-hmm. motivator to kind of say, okay, we really have to push this as hard as we can. And so he's changed the way we think about the way we work and added this new extra impetus, this new passion to kind of push things along as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, we've had so many of our JHDs pass just in the last 2 or 3 months. We've had quite a number, 5 or 6. And, you know, we know that urgency all too well with our loved ones leaving us too soon.
I know.
Soon, you know?
I was at the JHD walk earlier this last year. And mm-hmm. it's hard to see these children suffering like that. It's hard to see their families. They're so young, they haven't had a chance to even really experience life, and they're being put through this horrible disease. And so, yeah, you can't mm-hmm. be a witness to any of that and not want to do something about it in however small a way or bigger way you can. And so I think that's the important thing. We need to be able to get that kind of awareness, that kind of emotion and convey that to the government, convey that to our congressional representatives, to the people we send to Congress, because I think that's what's going to succeed in the end. Because once they see the level of, you know, of passion and drive and the level of need, I don't see how they can do anything but support change. I mean, I know that Congress for the last couple of years has had kind of a terrible reputation for being stuck and for being able to do nothing, but I think everyone in Congress, Republican or Democrat, would agree that there's a need for change, and the time for change is now.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the strategic plan. It's a 5-year plan.
Right. So when we were originally created, we were given $3 billion, and it was designed to last 10 years. But the research was at such a kind of a relatively immature level at that time that we couldn't spend the money fast enough. So we still were now 12 years into CIRM, and we still have enough money to go for another probably 5 years, we estimate. So we'll be going until about 2020, 2021. But we don't want to just kind of run out the clock. We don't want to just kind of keep going until we run out of money and say, oh, well, we tried. We have a plan mm-hmm. to use those last 5 years and the money we have remaining as effectively and powerfully as we can. We want to kind of aim as high as we can so that we can kind of go out, if we do go out, And we are still working on other sources of funding so we can keep this work going. But if we do go out, we want to go out knowing that we did everything we could to push along this research. And so we have all these fairly ambitious goals in our strategic plan, such as funding 50 new clinical trials in the next 5 years, which is, I mean, in the first 10 years, we only funded 10 clinical trials. We're now up to 14 already. But we want to do much more than that. And so the idea is to really just kind of push the envelope as hard as we can. And one of the things that will affect our ability to do that is the FDA. If the FDA is still working in the same way that it used to, then that's going to be really hard to get 50 clinical trials or get 50 projects that are really good enough, because we don't want to fund just anything. We want to fund the best science and the best research and the best scientists, the ones who have the biggest chance of producing something really life-changing.
So how can the patient advocates and caregivers make an impact? How can they help with this process?
Their voices. I mean, I think the more voices that we raise calling for change, that's the most powerful thing we have. It's an interesting thing when a group of people stand up and say things have to change. To begin with, it feels like you're kind of shouting in the wilderness. But as more and more people join you, you begin to see that. And it's not just the HD community for something like this. It's the Parkinson's community. It's the Alzheimer's. It's cancer. It's diabetes. It's heart disease. It's all of us. I mean, all of us are affected one way or another. I mean, there's not one person in this country who's not affected by one of these diseases or another. And so everyone has a shared interest in joining this campaign. And so we're hoping to get as many of those voices from as broad a coalition of people across this country as we can to say to the FDA, it's time to change, and the time is now. And so work with them to find the best way to do that, the way that makes most sense for the FDA, the way it's composed right now, but also makes most sense for stem cell research and the people who are waiting to benefit from it.
And so when will this campaign be publicly launched, or has it been?
Well, we're already working on it now. I mean, there's no kind of official launch date. Well, what we're trying to do is just gather as many names and emails and contact information as possible so that when we feel that we have a really kind of clear-cut strategy and a strong enough coalition, that we can begin to say, to reach out to the FDA, begin to reach out to our congressional representatives and to others in positions of influence, that this is the time and this is what we want to do. To begin with, it will probably just be a simple email or even a fax. Someone was telling me that probably some of the few people who actually use fax machines these days are in Congress. And if they get a load of faxes from the constituents saying, you know, this is an important subject for me, I want you to do something about it. It's really hard to ignore that, because the people who are taking the time to send those faxes in or those emails are constituents, are people who vote. And that really carries a lot of weight. I mean, I think it's interesting now. We're right in the heart of the presidential primaries. And you can see, as we saw in Iowa, that a relatively small number of people can have a big impact on who wins and who loses. And so we want to bring that same awareness to what we're doing, which is, it may seem like a small group of people, but spread out over the country, we can bring together millions of people to make this change.
Now, will CIRM be providing form letters and like a toolbox type of thing?
Yes, we already have a toolbox on our website that teaches people, you know, who are just new to this idea of being about a patient advocate, the things that they can do to be more effective in going out and talking about their particular area of concern. But yeah, what we'll be doing is we'll just be suggesting to people, here's something that you can do. And it may be it won't be like, here are the five things that you need to do to change the FDA. There may be something as simple as, like, it's time for the FDA to change. There needs to be a different way of regulating stem cell therapies. I mean, it can be as simple, as basic as that. But when there's enough people saying that, then the conversation starts. And once the conversation starts, then you can get all the different stakeholders in there who can bring a much more kind of focused idea about, here are the several things that we think need to be done.
Very good. So if you want to help, contact Kevin McCormick at KMCCORMACK at CIRM, CIRM.ca.gov. And you can also check out their website. It's a very robust website with lots of information. And as Kevin stated, there's a toolbox there that can help all of us advocates in different ways. But Kevin, you're looking for voices. You're looking for that army of stakeholders to...
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. The more people we can
reach
get to
out.
Join this army of stakeholders to reach out, to share, to join this cause, to raise their voices with ours, the more effective we'll be. And this is for everyone. This is something that affects all of us, regardless of where we live or what particular condition we're advocating on behalf of. This is something that has national, international significance. I mean, the things that we're doing today could completely change the face of medicine in the next 5-10 years. And so I think the more of us who try and kind of who are active and engaged in this, the more effective we'll be.
And the sense of urgency is now. We need to
Absolutely.
Do this now.
And I don't think, I mean, certainly for someone, yeah. I mean, for the HD community, there's no need to kind of remind them. I mean, every day they see this around them. I mean, this is yeah. something that they live with. The sense of urgency is now. With some other diseases that are more gradual, it's easier to kind of take a kind of a slightly longer term view. But I think for even there, you realize that there's a time. There's a clock running here, and sooner or later you run out of time, you run out of options. So the faster we do this, the quicker we get these changes made, I think the better chance we'll have of developing new treatments and hopefully even cures for many of these diseases.
And we can't sit back and wait for a cure, because we have to take part in the process. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think if one thing we've learned from CIRM is that in the beginning, I think an awful lot of people thought, well, for example, with the human genome, that once we cracked the human genome and understood the kind of the basic blueprint of our bodies, our genes, our DNA, that we'd have cures for everything by next Thursday. And science doesn't work
yeah.
that way. Our bodies are far more complex than we realize. And with stem cells, it's true. It's taken us 10 years to get to this point. Mm-hmm. So science never works as fast as we want it to, but it works faster if we all work together and kind of make the changes that we need to make it easier to do the kind of science that we need. California took a huge leap when they passed Proposition 71, giving us the money we needed to really kickstart this field in California. We need to kind of keep pushing that now. We can't kind of just stand back and say, well, we're doing the research, because the research is only one part of it. The next part is getting that research out of the lab and into people. And to do that, we really need to make some changes at the FDA, to change the way that the FDA regulates stem cells and regenerative medicine. There are great people there. They're really smart scientists at the FDA. They just need a bit of help and support in overcoming, I think, some political inertia that's kind of that they've become mired in over the years.
They need to be kind of prompted as to what the priorities are.
Well, the FDA is this enormous organization. I mean, they have their fingers in everything. I mean, the Food and Drug Administration, something like one in every $4 in the economy is somehow regulated or touched by FDA. It's an enormous thing. And it may be that just the scale of what they're trying to do, the scale of the challenges facing them is so huge that it's hard to imagine doing anything other than kind of like take the easy way, the default way. And we have to push it so that they don't do that, that they want to change, that they want to kind of help move this faster and help patients.
Right. Interesting stuff. Anything else that we haven't covered that you wanted to put out there?
It's just, for me, one of the pleasures of my job, the privileges of my job, is I get a chance to work with some of the researchers and see the incredible work that they're doing. And then also to be able to work with the patient advocates and see their drive and their determination to help those researchers in so many ways. I mean, I know the HD community has been instrumental in helping fund some of the really early stage work that was being done mm-hmm. by Jen Nolte and her team at UC Davis. And without that support, without that kind of commitment, they wouldn't have been able to get the information, the data they needed to be able to apply to us for a grant or to apply to the NIH for funding. So I see that passion, I see that drive, every day in the work that I do, and it's extraordinary and it's inspiring. And I think if we can just tap into that on a kind of a national level, then we'll really be able to make the changes that we all need.
Don't you think the HD advocates are the best ones?
They're certainly the best looking.
That's you.
No, I mean, I think one of the things I've been privileged to do is just to be able to spend a lot of time with HD advocates, such as yourself, Frances Saldana, Judy Robertson, Katie Jackson, of course. So many incredible people, and to be able to kind of be around them and see the strengths is extraordinary. I mean, it's quite humbling. And to see that same kind of strength in so many other communities, in the ALS community, and some of the others. I mean, you just look around and you think, how would I react if I were in that same position? And so it inspires us. I mean, what's been fun here is seeing how, with this new strategic plan, a lot of the science officers here, who in the past were just, they would kind of monitor the reports and be engaged in kind of making sure that the projects we funded stayed on target. Now they're going out and actually kind of trying to hunt projects that they think are promising. So they're going to companies, they're going to researchers, they're really basically going out there pitching, and it's given them a new kind of energy. It's fascinating to see that they're really engaged. And another thing that we do now that we didn't do before is that when we fund a clinical trial or a project that's heading to a clinical trial, we create what we call a CAP, which is a clinical advisory panel. And this is basically three or five people. Some of them are subject matter experts in stem cells, some are science officers here. But on every CAP, there's a patient advocate, because we need their guidance. We need their knowledge of what this disease is like and how it affects people, so that when we do create a clinical trial, it's designed with the patient in mind. Because if you don't do that, then you're less likely to be able to recruit patients and less likely to be able to retain them. So what we're trying to do now is just make sure that the patient advocates have a voice in every single thing that we do and in every single step that we take. And so that's why we want to engage them in this campaign to help change the FDA, because it's their voices and their power and their stories that ultimately I think will make people realize we have to change.
Well, I think if anybody can do it, it's the HD community.
Oh, absolutely.
We
absolutely
have a lot
I don't doubt
advocate.
That. The strength and the passion and the commitment is kind of, it's awe-inspiring.
Well, I know from firsthand that when you do advocate for your loved one or for a community, it's empowering, you know, and you don't feel so frustrated, you don't feel so helpless, because you're doing something that's going to help, you know. So I would encourage anyone to be an advocate.
And that's the power of the
advocacy,
I think, because so often diseases like HD make you feel almost powerless, because you look around and, I mean, everyone goes online and looks for treatments and therapies, and there's nothing out there. And so you just think, well, what can we do? I mean, it's almost like this sense of, like, just kind of throw your hands up in despair. And yet I think when you see the HD community, there's so many people who haven't done that, who've said, okay, there isn't anything now, but we're going to work to make sure that there will be something soon. And so that's part of the kind of the commitment. And so this is hopefully an extension of that, where we're, as you work towards kind of helping support the research and drive the research, then the HD community can also help us drive the change that's needed to make that research more readily available to all the people who need it.
Right. And, you know, even if you can't leave your house, you have a phone, you have a computer, you may have a fax machine. There are lots of things that you can do just from your kitchen table.
Absolutely. I mean, because if you look at all the projects now that are being crowdfunded from people who never had to leave the house, I mean, because they may not be able to, but they want to support things in the way they can. And so, yes, writing an email, sending a fax, making a phone call, these all count. I mean, and you can call your congressional representative's local office, and the call there is just as important and just as effective as calling them in Washington, D.C., because the voices are heard. They hear these local voices, local causes, and they just realize this is something we need to act on, because were getting a lot of pressure. And when they go back to D.C. and they talk to their colleagues in Congress and realize that people from all over the U.S. are getting that same pressure, that creates a momentum. That creates this sense of,
right,
okay, we need to do something about this. We need to act on this. And because it's a bipartisan issue, there's nothing to be lost. It's not like you're playing politics. You're just saying, we need to make these changes. And that's the power of the advocate.
I like that. Kevin, you're amazing, too. CIRM is very lucky to have you. You are just a sweetheart.
I feel blessed to be here. I mean, really, every day, I still kind of get a little shiver when I walk in the door and see that name, California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. I think I'm working here. This is
amazing.
A place that in years to come, we could look back on and say that changed the face of medicine. And we did that here in California. But just to feel like, you know, I was part of it is just, it's an extraordinary thing. I mean, the people I meet on a daily basis are just amazing. I'm constantly, as we say in Ireland, gobsmacked that I'm here. And I love it. I think it's just extraordinary.
Now, can people call you as well?
Oh, absolutely.
On
yes. My, yeah. Call me at any moment.
Okay.
So my phone number, probably the best way, is through my cell. And that's area code 415-361-2903. That's 415-361-2903. And I promise to get back to everyone just as quickly as I can. I may not be able to take your call right away, but I mean, I'm happy to take as many messages or answer as many calls as I can and then respond to them all as quickly as I can. This is something that's going to be our cause for the next 5 years for as long as we're going to be around. And so there's a real sense of urgency here. And all my colleagues here, all of us are going to be responding as quickly as we can, as powerful as we can.
Now, are they going to be putting together a new proposition for additional funding?
That's not something we could do. As a state agency, it would be considered rather bad form to actually kind of put together another proposition to say, can we have some more money, please?
Somebody might be.
We are working on a whole number of different programs to create a kind of more funding for the agency, because I think the work that we do is so important and we don't want to see it dwindle away or die at the end of it. One of the things that we do is we help programs get through what they call the valley of death, where they have this really promising idea and they can do some initial research, but then they need to take it into a clinical trial. And often that has to get through two phases of a clinical trial to show that it works before the big pharmaceutical companies or investors will jump in and put some money in. It's really hard to get the money to get through those. So that's where we come in. We're the really kind of the pivotal player in this, that we can provide that money. We can help get them through those clinical trial, the early phases, to be able to prove that, you know, this is effective. This looks really good. And we've seen this with a number of the programs that we've been funding. Once we help them through those phases, some of the bigger pharmaceutical companies start to partner with them and put up a couple of $100 million and say, we think this is really interesting. Let's support it. And so the more we can do that, the better the track record for stem cells and stem cell therapies, then the more likely the big pharmaceutical companies are to try and get into that space earlier. And once you get that, once you get the big pharmaceuticals in there, then all of a sudden you have a real powerful ally in this area. And so that's another reason why, if we can get them on board, we can kind of double the impact of our voices at the government level, at the FDA level.
Right. If we can just get them on board. That's the key.
But that's why it's important for us to be able to keep working and keep funding. So there has been talk of, from some other groups about kind of creating another ballot initiative for maybe 2018. But that's 2 years away, and that's certainly something that we wouldn't be part of because we wouldn't be able to. As a government agency. But clearly there's a lot of people out there who feel that the promise of what we started in 2004 is finally being realized, and that we don't want to turn back now. We don't want to say, okay, we tried and it didn't work, because we are trying and it is working, and we need to keep trying.
Right. You can't stop, you know, right before the finish line, right?
Absolutely. And that's the whole point, is like, we're not going out quietly. We're going to be running as hard as we can for as long as we can. We've come a long way. In 10 years, we've advanced the science extraordinarily. And it's not literally there isn't a week go by that I don't read some new study or article that kind of says we found out this new way of using stem cells. And so the field is exploding. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was in a lab in Cedars-Sinai yesterday with Dr. Clive Svensson, who heads the regenerative medicine program there. And he's got an award from us to do some work in ALS, and he's doing some really interesting work. Mm. And also in Huntington's as well. He's doing some really interesting work in Huntington's. But the number of different programs that his lab is working on is just phenomenal. I mean, it was really, you just kind of walk around with your mouth open, because you think 5 years from now, these things are just extraordinary, the technology that they're able to tap into. And just look at things like iPS technology, which is a cell that looks like and acts like an embryonic stem cell in many ways, but you take it from, mm-hmm. from your own body. So a piece of skin, for example, mm-hmm. that you could turn into an iPS cell that you can then turn into a brain cell that looks, and if that piece of skin came from someone with Huntington's, you can see the impact of Huntington's on the brain cells that you've manufactured. So in a sense, it's almost like kind of real time. You're able to understand this is what's going on in a neuron or in a brain cell for someone with Huntington's. And so then you're able to say, well, what therapies, what drugs do we have, or what could we do to counteract that? And so you mm-hmm. have this living tool from a person, and you're able to kind of think, okay, this is what's going on. How do we counteract that? So the research is just advancing at a rapid rate, I mean, at a fascinating rate. And hopefully the therapies will be coming along at an equally fast rate, too.
Now, doesn't CIRM have a program for students as well?
We do. We have one of the things we've been doing since the beginning is that we've had this real commitment not just to advancing the research, but advancing the kind of training the next generation of scientists. And so we've had several programs that have worked with kind of creating opportunities for young people. But two of the ones that I think are the most important are our Bridges program. And that works with people at the graduate and master's level, and particularly focusing on people from minority backgrounds or from communities that are often not represented in science. Because the idea is we want to give people a chance to really get experience in stem cell research. And so we place these people in world-class research facilities. We give them, it's kind of a paid internship. They get an opportunity to work with some of the best and brightest scientists in the world and come out of it after a couple of years with some great qualifications. And I think 95% of the people who've been through this program, and there's about 700 of them over the years, have either gone on to get a PhD or they've got jobs in labs as technicians doing some of the really important work that we need to help drive this research. But another program here, which I think is everyone's favorite, is our SPARC, or what we used to call our creativity program. And they work with high school kids. And again, we try to kind of attract kids from small, from low-income communities, from minority communities, and give them a chance to spend 8 weeks in the summer in a world-class researcher's laboratory. And it's so funny when you meet these kids, because they're 16, 17, 18 years old, and many of them have never really thought about science before, and they go into this internship thinking that they're just going to be doing things like kind of rinsing out beakers and stuff like that. And then the first day they get there, they're told, okay, here's some stem cells, here's how you grow them, go and do it. And at first I think they're kind of shocked. But they respond in such amazing ways. By the end of this 8 weeks, they put together presentations on the work they did, and they sound like scientists. I mean, you're looking at them and they're kids, but they sound like scientists, and they're so enthusiastic about the work and the passion that they have. And they just, like, in many cases, they just say, you know, it's opened my eyes and made me think about being a scientist, and something they'd never thought about before, because for them, this just wasn't something, you know, that someone from their neighborhood ever did. And now they're thinking about it. So it's so much fun. I mean, it's really inspiring. And just, it's wonderful to see these kids, and they do such great work. It's great.
One of our taglines, education is everything. It really is, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And our kids coming up are so smart, and they have so much promise, you know, that education is going to really change the world. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And when you think about the progress we've made in the last 10 years, And this is only going to continue. We need the next generation of scientists that are going to have that same passion and drive to be able to continue the advances that we've made and build on those. And so this is where we find them. It's like you find them in high school, and you get them excited at that point, and they just take off from there. It's wonderful.
They're so smart. Well, Kevin, can you stick around while I do a couple of announcements, and then we'll go back in the screen
room?
Glad
to.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kevin. This has been fabulous. Very informative.
Thank you, Melissa. It's been my pleasure.
Appreciate your passion. Oh, my goodness. We need more people working together with this level of passion to help our advocates, you know, set them on fire as far as doing the advocacy work that needs to be done. So thank you. And
absolutely.
Upcoming events.
But I think with the HD community, there's no need to set them on fire. We just need to put them in touch with others, and they'll set them on fire. And we'll start this blaze that will just kind of sweep the country.
I love it. All right. So upcoming events in 2016, we have Katie Jackson is putting on our third annual symposium in Sacramento on April 9th. It's at the Doubletree Hilton. May 1st, Jackie Hamilton Walk for HD is going to be at Glen Island Park in New York. Gabby Hamilton is putting that event on. Then we have a tentative concert sometime this summer. I'm not sure when. Probably in August. In October 8th, we have another symposium in Tallahassee, and Sharon Thomason is putting that on at Wakulla, at the Lodge at Wakulla Springs. So that's going to be interesting. We like to just go ahead and close off the show now, and we thank Kevin again for spending this time with us, and thank all of you out there for listening and tuning into the show. Don't forget to tell your colleagues, family, and friends about Help for HD Radio. Visit us on our website, helpforhd.org, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. Also, these episodes are archived on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. So good night, everyone. Have a great week. Talk to you soon. Hello, are you there?
Yes. Yes.
Good so, okay. Kevin.
Oh, I was having Blog Talk gremlins.
It didn't show on my end. I was listening. It was really, came in really clear. Yeah, it was fine.
Kevin, you're amazing.
I was listening to it live.
Yeah. That was my hair.
You did good.
It was fantastic. No, that's great. And that's so, Kevin, like, that's all you just let us know what we need to do. Like, if you're like, we can put it up on website, we can blast it on social media, you know, email Kevin, we'll have your email up. We just need direction on what you want us to do, and then and we'll be able to do it. And then let's plan on having a meeting here in Sacramento. How fun would that be?
Absolutely.
What we can do is if you do a meeting, we can go like maybe out for coffee prior to it or something.
Yeah. So maybe we should aim for early March. That gives people a time to think about things.
Yeah.
So let me look at maybe the week of the 7th of March or something like that. How's that for you?
That works out great. I'll put it on. Just let me know the date, and I'll get it on my calendar and lock it in. And
okay.
We have hundreds of people already RSVP'd for Symposium in Sacramento. It's going to be such a hugely attended event.
Let's make a conversation off the air, because I'm not sure. I think I have gremlins here that's not letting me.
Okay.
We might be live right now.
Email Kevin about that. So.
Yeah, but Kevin, also, I wanted to ask you too real quick before I sign off. Have you thought about doing surveys? We'll talk about that. We can do surveys. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin.
Okay. Thanks so much. I'll be in touch. Okay.
Okay.
Bye.